I'm Gail Hunt, and I'm excited to bring you Fun Time with Cliff Goodwin, a rock and talk series of Cliff's Tales from the Road, a behind-the-scenes look at his rock and roll adventures right here at WCUW.
Where did we leave off? In our fearless leader's last escapade into the oblivion of the road. Let's go back to Europe for a while. I remember vividly playing in Europe in Berlin. This is before the wall fell. We were staying in a hotel that was right next to the wall. I remember staying up half the night because if you look left, you see Berlin lights up, you know, West Berlin, the lights are blaring, people are music, you can see everything was blinking and everything was alive. And you look to the right and you see East Berlin and it's black. It's dark. And every now and then there was like a, like we used to call it, the cops said, a bubblegum, like a bubblegum machine that would come, you know, you'd see a light, a cop car, but would go by. Mm-hmm. And it was a vivid explanation, 24 karat color, you know, the West versus the East. And I felt so bad for the people in the East because they could literally see the people in the West partying like crazy. It must have affected them horribly, but of course they were totally suppressed and repressed and put down. Many, many years later, we did go back to Europe for another project, and we had the advantage of going to well into East Germany. Now, this is after unification. This was after the turn of the century. So it was after unification, but we played a city called Dresden. Amazingly eye-opening, because Dresden, even though 20 years, two decades after unification, Dresden was still very gray and very bleak. And I asked the production manager, well, why? Why is this? You think they'd come into the fray? He said, well, even we Germans call Dresden the Valley of the Clueless, because the Dresden is in a bowl. And it didn't get Radio Free Europe really well. It didn't get anything that was a tease of the West. So when there was unification, their lives really didn't change that much because they had no thing to base the promised land on, so to speak, if you will. And it was very, very telling. But because it was, they were in this valley, they didn't get Radio Free Europe as well and all those broadcasts back in the early 80s and mid 80s and obviously 70s and 60s to let these the people in East Germany know, hey, there's something really cool going on in the West, you know, even though you've been told something else. To that point, around the same time, we played Yugoslavia, which was back then a country unto itself. We played Zagreb, and we played Belgrade. It was really, again, very telling. This was now 19, this is before unification. This is late 80s. And we landed at the airport, and you normally would land back then, and you'd go and find the cambio, which was like the bank, the change. You could change money, your dollars or whatever currency you had to change into the local currency. The local currency in those years in Yugoslavia was called the dinars. And it was, so I go to the cambio, the bank at the airport, and there's no American flag. There's all the rest of the world, but there's no American flag. I'm saying, oh, wow, this is really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. So you can't change your dollars at the airport. Okay, fine. I changed some other currency into dinars. It was lira or marks or whatever. Back then, keep in mind, every country had its own, you know. Got to the hotel. We were staying at the Intercontinental Hotel in Belgrade. And there was an American flag with all the other country flags, so you could change your dollars into dinars. So we all lined up to change our dollars because we're going to be there for a few days and we want to be able to pay the bills. The manager of the hotel comes running over, screaming, stop! Stop! Don't do this. We finally figured out he had said what the point he was trying to get across was, if you promise to pay your bill in American dollars, we'll leave the hotel open for you 24/7. at that point, I looked to my bandmate, his name was Larry Marshall, and I said, there you go. That tells you where the USSR, where communism is going. They want the dollar, but they can't tell you until you get into a situation like this where they want that dollar. Yeah. They don't want dinars, they don't want rubles, they don't want things like that. And I said, okay, so I guess at this point it's only a matter of time because money makes the world go round, so to speak. You know, so that was a very interesting, vivid scene of things to come, without a doubt. We were touring Europe in 1986, and I believe that's when the Chernobyl disaster happened. And at this point we're only a couple hundred miles from Chernobyl, and nobody really knew what was going to happen. If it was going to melt down, it's going to be the end of the world. Again, in typical Russian fashion, they weren't letting out much information. And all we could get from the news services, whatever we could listen to, was, we hope the wind isn't blowing the wrong way, because all this potential radioactive smoke and cinders and all the rest of this stuff was getting up into the atmosphere. Eventually, I think they determined that it did blow north into Scandinavia, Norway and Sweden, but I guess time told out that it dissipated. But it was a real scary time, because, you know, you're over there rocking and rolling, and in the back of your mind it's like, well, is this the beginning of the end? Did someone really mess up? You know?
Well, how was the crowds? I mean, did they react differently, or were they just
no? The crowds. Well, the funny thing about the European crowds is, they live the Europeans are great that way. They live their life, because at any given, well, there's a funny story about, we played Strasbourg, which is right on the border of France and Germany. It's right on the border. I was talking to this guy and saying, well, you know, this is really, really a cool little town. He goes, yeah. Everybody in town has two flags. I said, what do you mean? He said, oh, we keep a German flag and a French flag in case whatever happens. We carry on, but you never know what flag you've got to fly tomorrow. This is, of course, a holdover kind of from World War II, but even World War I. You know, the point is, they live their life. It was very, very telling. They carry on. Who knows who's, you know, the Who song, right? Meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
That's right.
Carry on. So, yeah, that was kind of the Chernobyl story into the fact that the audiences didn't change. I mean, when we played Belfast, and I expect these people to be shell-shocked. This was during the Troubles, and they were great. Some of the best audiences in the world were places where there was an element of oppression. The audiences in Israel were fantastic. And, of course, we all know, you know, they're surrounded 24/7 by people who want to, you know, put an end to it. That was vivid.
I'd like to thank Cliff Goodwin for this fun time episode. We look forward to hearing more next week. Tune in to The Drive at 5 and for our Rock and Talk series around 6 p.m.